Welcome to the Scuffed Podcast. I'm Adam Bells in Minneapolis. With me is Greg Velasquez in Des Moines. We talk about U.S. men's soccer. The U-20 World Cup is coming up fast. It's 3 weeks away. And according to Brian Shiretta, the Tab Ramos roster reveal is 10 days away, May 10th. Matt Hartman's on the phone with me to talk about the roster. We're going to get specific about who we'd like to see called up and why. Matt, thanks for dialing in again. Appreciate it.
No problem, Bells. Glad to be back.
Awesome. Let's do this. But first, we should set aside two names just for the moment, I think. Can you guess who those two names are?
Yeah, I'm guessing you're talking about Timothy Weah and Josh Sargent.
Yeah, it's a surprisingly hard name to say.
Right?
Josh Sargent. Yeah. Yeah, those two, they may be included in this roster. I think that's still sort of possible. They may not. And while I personally would much rather see them at the Gold Cup than the U-20 World Cup, I can see the arguments on both sides. What's your opinion on that?
Yeah, I'm in agreement. The way I view it, I'd rather have Weah and Sargent playing for the full national team. I'd rather have them there than with the U-20s. That being said, I think I'd rather have them playing at the U-20 World Cup than warming the bench at the Gold Cup. So I think it's a decision that's up to Berhalter, who's hopefully communicating with Tab about his intentions for Weah and Sargent in the senior team. If he doesn't view them as starters or, let's say, at the very least, significant role players, then I think they should be in Poland. But yeah, that's pretty much my view. But that lines up with your mindset, right?
Yeah, I guess there's just no way to know, right? We don't really know what Berhalter thinks about it. He's signaled that he wants Josh Sargent at the Gold Cup. I don't know if he said anything specific about Weah in that regard. I guess I think there's enough doubt about them and enough of a case either way that we should make rosters without them, make U-20 rosters without them as our starting point, and then circle back at the end and talk about who gets cut from those rosters if Weah, Sargent, or both ends up at the U-20 World Cup in Poland. Cool?
Yep, sounds good.
Okay. What's your sort of methodology here?
I think that there's a certain way you have to go about building U-20 rosters, and that we have a little bit of history to work with here with Tab Ramos in terms of his methodology in constructing a World Cup roster. Mm-hmm. So I'm gonna name what I call the five tenets of a Tab Ramos World Cup roster.
Oh my gosh! Everybody, get your pens out.
Yeah. So the first thing is positional flexibility, meaning that much of the roster, but especially the bench players, are usually going to be able to fill in at multiple positions, which is a really important thing in tournaments like this when, you know, you have a 21-man roster, 18 of them are field players, 11 of them are starters. You know, you don't have a ton of room to bring a player at every position. And
right,
given how crunched together the schedule is, you're going to need some players to fill in some positions that aren't maybe the one that they are being specifically brought for. The second thing I'll say is that Tab likes to bring coverage at the back. The better sides at the U-20 World Cup generally, though not always, bring six defenders. Every cycle Tab has been in charge of the U-20s, he's brought seven. Generally four center backs and three fullbacks, but you know that could get a little bit wishy-washy with some fullback center back tweeners.
Yeah.
The third thing I'll say is that Tab likes to go for talent over familiarity. Tab hasn't been afraid to bring in players into the U-20 World Cup who he hasn't even called in before. Last cycle, Tab brought in Langos Kunga and Josh Sargent for the World Cup, and those were the first U-20 games that they played at the tournament. The fourth thing I'll say is that there's an emphasis on athleticism in Tab's rosters. When two players at a certain position are close in terms of talent, he's more likely to take the athletic player, which I agree with to a point. You know, you want players on the bench who could take advantage of tired legs and tired bodies on the other side. Maybe we could look at Jonathan Gonzalez versus Derek Jones as being the prime example of this.
That infamous choice.
Right. And the last one I'll say is that he's going to bring a goalkeeper for next cycle. Tab has taken a goalkeeper who was able to play in the next U20 World Cup in two of the three cycles he's had a team there. The only exception being in the 2015 cycle when the underage goalkeepers were particularly bad for the next cycle. So it made sense not to do it then. But I think that it's something that Tab specifically targets in building these rosters.
Okay, well, that's a good segue. I mean, that's good stuff altogether, but it's also a good segue to the first position, goalkeepers.
Right.
Who you got?
Okay, so you have to bring three goalkeepers to this thing. So mm-hmm. I'm going to bring David Ochoa, Trey Muse, and CJ Dos Santos. Let's start by talking about Ochoa. I think he's probably the most talented of the keepers in the U20 pool, meaning he's the one I feel most comfortable betting on having a full national team future.
Mm-hmm.
He has had a few good USL games before stumbling in that last one, but watching the highlights, I didn't really see anything too worrying. Taking stock of the goalkeepers in this age range, I think he might actually be in consideration to start. As none of the older players have really filled me with a ton of confidence that they would do as well as even as well as Ochoa has done in USL. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, he was. I had him on the podcast last week. He was really good. If you listen to that interview, this is all going to be old news to you. But he was really good in USL. The first four games, I think, of the season, and wasn't mm-hmm. named goalkeeper of the week in the league two of those 4 weeks. I think conceded only three goals, so less than a goal a game. I also like the way he plays with his feet. He's very confident and comfortable with the ball at his feet, and I think he just has he puts out a great vibe back there. You know, he's always smiling, you know, trying to control the rhythm of the game a little bit. You know, if things start going south a little bit for Real Monarchs, he's happy to slow things down. Just seems like he has a lot of the pieces that we want from a goalkeeper. I also thought he looked very good in limited minutes at the November CONCACAF Championship. I think he only played one game. Is that right? Or maybe one and a half?
Yep.
But he looked very good in that game. And Brady Scott, who we haven't mentioned yet, also looked good in that tournament. But he did have a couple, maybe two, three really unnecessarily dangerous moments. That, you know, we would be totally dominating the game and then there'd be a ball would sort of head back towards the goalkeeper. And a couple times there was a miscommunication or something.
I will say about Scott that I thought that he did have his best game against Mexico in the final.
Mm-hmm.
And that when he did look a little shaky earlier in qualifying, it was in games where like it was the first thing he had to do that game. he didn't really get a proper warm up in the first like 20, 30 minutes of some of those games.
Right.
So Scott is a player that I would have liked to have seen in the tour go to Poland, but it doesn't sound like we're going to get to see him there, right?
Yeah, I mean, I heard that he's hurt, and you know, I can't like confirm that 100%, but that's what I heard. And you know, the truth of that is somewhat bolstered by the fact he hasn't been in a roster since at least I think April 1st for Köln 2, even though he was a regular starter for them before that. So.
Right.
Going on that, it doesn't seem like he's healthy. Maybe he gets healthy before May 24th. It's possible.
All right. Well, till we find out more on the Scott front, we still got two more goalkeepers to bring. All right. So let's talk about CJ Dos Santos, who I've liked every time I've seen him. We just don't get to see too much of him.
Mm-hmm.
He's really quick off his line and a really good athlete. You know, one of the better athletes we've had for one of our youth national teams. But you just worry about his preparedness for a level like the U20 World Cup, given that, you know, he's yet to play a professional game and he's behind a couple, if not three or four goalkeepers to even start getting minutes for Benfica's B side. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if he's the man starting in Ukraine. Against Ukraine at the World Cup, just because I think he's a really talented kid.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't have a ton of work to go off of.
Yeah, I know almost nothing about him. I've never seen him play. I just following him on Instagram. It was a slip when you said that the game was going to be in Ukraine, but it's not that far off.
Right.
It's like 4 hours from the Ukrainian border. So it's going to be like an away game. I think I saw there are 15 million Ukrainians living in Poland as well. Yeah, I guess I'll take Muse. I think he I know he's highly rated. At least he's highly rated in our little soccer bubble. But he hasn't looked good for the Tacoma Defiance, and I don't know how much of that is just, you know, beginner's bad luck. How much is the fact that he's goalkeeper for a highly experimental squad that isn't even out there trying to win, seemingly most weeks.
Yeah, it'd be hard for any goalkeeper to look good behind that defense. You know?
Yeah, he has. It's I gotta caution myself a little bit because he had a. I think the opening game of the season, he cost them that game with two pretty bad concessions of goals.
But yeah, I think it'd be fair to say even with, you know, the defense in front of him, he hasn't covered himself in glory for Tacoma. I think he's looked a little slow to react to the ball all season, really. And they have, I think Tacoma still has allowed the most goals in all of the USL. And, you know, I think a couple of them, if not more, are squarely on his shoulders.
Yeah. But long and the short of it is we're in agreement. It's going to be those three goalkeepers, unless I'm dead wrong about Brady Scott, I guess.
Right. Unless Brady Scott's there, he has to be there just because, the fact of the matter is he's a 19-year-old being tested regularly at a level above college soccer, and there just aren't that many of them. Eric Lopez of Galaxy 2 is the only other 99 I could think of with a good amount of USL minutes, and he hasn't been in a U20 camp, to my knowledge, and I don't even think he's the starter for that team anymore. So.
Right. There's some younger kids. There's that Abraham Rodriguez for the switchbacks. He's like a 16-year-old goalkeeper.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's a little young.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to the defense. This is where it gets a little more interesting. Who you got?
So the first player I'm going to take is Chris Gloucester. He was a really solid presence at the back in qualifying, probably the most consistent defender we had during the group stage. He's just a really well-rounded fullback, and I do worry about him a little bit against the cream of the crop in Poland because he has stiff hips and for a fullback and might have trouble defending wingers with elite lateral quickness, but he's a no-brainer to make the roster just because, you know, if not, because how good he is, just because the lack of serious competitors at the position. Yeah. I heard you propose that you were becoming a left back factory, but I think that starts next cycle.
Yeah, right. With the FC starting at FC Dallas. I agree on Gloucester. I do, like you said, I do worry a little bit about him against, say, this is not going to be a hypothetical. It's reality coming down the pike. Samuel Chukwueze, the Nigerian winger who's a starter in La Liga for Villarreal, scored a goal against Barcelona a few weeks ago, kind of comes in on his left foot and looks absolutely terrifying. That's going to be Gloucester with his work cut out for him there. I don't want to go too far ahead of ourselves, but I could see maybe, you know, if Gloucester struggles against an elite winger, say struggles against one of the Ukrainian wingers, I could see Serginho Dest slotting in over there at left back and then bringing in some, you know, one of the other players at right back.
Right. So you view Dest as a better defender than Gloucester?
I don't know if I'm ready to say that. I think it's possible. Do you think Gloucester is a better defender than Dest?
I proposed the question to you because it's a question I can't answer.
Yeah.
So it's very close.
I mean, Dest is a pretty good defender.
So, oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
I don't know. I guess it's just a contingency plan, you know, if things go south. But I would agree Gloucester's a starter at left back in game one.
Well, I think Gloucester will be backed up by Matt Real, mm-hmm. who I'm going to take begrudgingly. he's a player that he's probably the player I have on my roster that I'm the most uneasy about. We allowed two goals in U20 qualifying, and I think that he was the player most at fault for both of them. he lunged in and got sidestepped on Puerto Rico's goal and allowed a ball to go through his legs against Trinidad that set up their opportunity. That one in particular definitely shouldn't have happened. But quite frankly, I think we have a few players in the pool who are better at playing center back in the U20 pool right now than Real is. And I don't have them on the roster, namely Abubakar Keita and Michael Edwards. But when it comes down to it, I don't think they are enough of an improvement at the center back position to lose the flexibility that Real offers the team, being able to play both center back and left back.
Right. There's also the sort of leadership idea. He's a guy that Tab really trusts. And I think he captain the team a couple times in qualifying?
Yep. Yeah.
So I see no problem with bringing him along. He seems like a good dude, even if he's not the most talented on the squad.
I agree. I hope it just doesn't come back, you know, to bite us one of those games where he has to play center back, you know. So,
yeah. If we get a bunch of yellow card accumulation and injuries and stuff, and he's in the starting lineup, that will not be ideal. Watch, Tab will just start him in the first game at center back.
Right. All right, so you want to talk right backs?
Yeah, so just to recap, we got Gloucester and Real at left back. Real can slot in at center back. Let's go right back, yeah.
So we're going to bring two right backs in, Sergiño Dest and Julian Araujo. Not much we could say about Dest that hasn't already been said, but he's an elite talent, and I think he'll be a difference maker whenever he's on the field for the team. And I fully expect that Tab starts him at right back, and he shows to be one of the most influential players on the team, even though, you know, maybe the most influential player not playing in central midfield.
Yeah.
And Araujo is quickly becoming one of my favorite players. I think he's shown in his two MLS starts that he's a great athlete and a very good 1v1 defender. He'll be one of the youngest players, if not the youngest player on the team. And so I think it's probably good that he'll have a player like Dest in front of him and he won't be asked to start right away, but I think he could start in that Qatar game and potentially fill in at center back, you know, if players get into card trouble.
Yeah, totally agree. I think he's coming on strong. He's closing the gap between him and Dest. It's too bad he got injured up here in this accursed place we called Minnesota. but it doesn't sound like it's too bad of an injury, and he should be back pretty soon. Just like you said, what a great 1v1 defender. I mean, he shut down Albert Elise. He didn't get beat by Elise.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he had Elise running at him at speed multiple times in that game, and nothing came of any of that, you know, which is not something that most MLS fullbacks can say, let alone a teenager.
Well, national team fullbacks for the U.S. can't say it. yeah. And then he shut down, or didn't shut him down, but he didn't get beat by Kevin Molino either, when he's fully fit, is a excellent CONCACAF winger for Trinidad. He plays for Minnesota United. There's a little bit of a caveat there that Molino was coming back from injury and is still not 100% fit, which is fair. But, you know, that's his second MLS start. He's doing well against the CONCACAF wingers. And I know for a fact that Mexico is paying attention to him, you know, and
they'd be stupid not to.
Yeah. He looks like the kind of player who's going to play in a World Cup someday. Right. The way he moves, the way he wins physical battles.
Yeah. Watching those games back, the only thing from the performances you can really nitpick is that when he's had to clear the ball, just get it out, he's put the ball back into dangerous spots, you know, like a couple of times. And that's not great, but that's totally something that comes with experience at the professional level. Not something that should at all worry anybody about long-term prospects.
Yeah. And his passing maybe isn't the cleanest. He's not quite as elegant on the ball as Sergiño Dest, for instance.
Right. That's a tremendously high bar, though, you know.
Yeah. But I think it's important for him to be in this roster. Even if he doesn't start any games, it's important for him to be part of the group because he's down there in LA. He's hanging out with Jonah Dos Santos every day. I think he's in play, and we got to do what we can to keep him around. I know we don't make call-up decisions based on this, but he merits it anyway, and I'm just saying it's an added bonus to have him be part of this group and experience what's hopefully a somewhat successful U-20 World Cup with the United States of America. Okay. Yep. So I agree with those two as well. Should we move to center back?
Let's do it. So I have three center backs on the roster, given that that was four fullbacks. So I'm going to take Chris Richards, Mark McKenzie, and James Sands. I think Richards is CB1 on the team. He didn't put a foot wrong after arriving late for U20 qualifying and is probably the best pure defender in the whole pool. Regardless of who's next to him, he's probably going to have to put out a couple fires over the course of 90 minutes, but I think he's fully capable of doing it, and I wouldn't be surprised if he plays just about every minute of this tournament.
Yeah, well said. Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that on Richards, except for this. He is probably the best defender in the pool. He's not as expansive of a passer as, say, Mark McKenzie is. That's my opinion. And so I think it's going to work out nicely, whether it's McKenzie or Sands, to have, you know, Richards next to somebody who's probably a little more comfortable on the ball. Yep. I'm not saying McKenzie is Mats Hummels or anything, and neither is James Sands, but they're just, you know, marginally probably better equipped to distribute out of the back than Richards is.
Yeah, I agree. Either of them are very good U20 center back combinations, you know. Like I'm happy with Richards next to McKenzie. I'm happy with Richards next to Sands. That's a pretty good, nice place to be in.
Yeah.
Center backs.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great back four. If you got Gloucester, Richards, Sands, Dest, right. I'd feel confident about that.
Yeah. Sands has been wonderful for NYCFC in a five-man back line this season. So, you know, I really want him to get called up. You know, the one question that I have about Sands is that playing in a five-man back line where he's given some freedom to move along the line and follow the ball to prevent direct attacks, which is a role that like really fits his skill set and allows him to keep the game in front of him. I do worry a little bit about a transition to a four-man back line. Not only because of that, but also because having two other center backs on the field kind of makes up for his lack of aerial prowess and the occasional swing and miss he takes in the tackle. But I still think he's more than capable of getting the job done.
Well, it's neither option is going to be perfect either, right? Because McKenzie's played all of 15 minutes all spring, and then now he's working back from an appendectomy. I think is he back in training this week? Do we know?
I haven't seen that he's back in training yet. That'd be a little bit of a quick recovery, but I hope it's true.
Well, if it's not this week, it's going to be next week because it's supposed to be like a 2-week turnaround. In any case, he's not going to be at his sharpest, presumably. Maybe the Qatar match is when he gets the start or something.
Right. I'd say that even if he has to miss some of the pre-tournament training camp, you need to bring him. His passing ability out of the back and professional experience are just too important to leave him at home.
He'll have something to prove, too. He's had a rough start to 2019. Yeah, I have faith in Tab that he'll call up Sands. I think it's kind of a no-brainer at this point. Why would you go with a kid who just made his first USL appearance like last night or a couple nights ago?
Speaking about Abubakar Keita.
Yeah. When you have somebody, even if it isn't a five-man back line, you have somebody who's started three straight games at center back in Major League Soccer and played well. I just think that would be a wild decision to take Keita over Sands.
Yeah, I definitely don't. I can't rationalize bringing Keita over Sands, but Keita has been the one getting called into camps by Tab, and in his defense, in terms of the playing time he's been getting in USL, he did just return after being out, I think, like basically the whole month with a hamstring injury.
Right. I'm not saying it's his fault that he hasn't played yet, but I'm just saying in reality, he got his first professional minutes within the last 72 hours. Sands is quite a bit further along than that.
Right.
But I guess we'll see, you know. I feel like we're going to see Sands, Richards, and McKenzie. I feel like Tav's going to call up exactly this back seven. I'd be surprised if he doesn't.
Yeah, I think this is it. The only question mark that is in my mind is Cato over Sands. I think that's the only one that could happen. And I wonder, you know, the one thing that we haven't talked about, you know, we talked about potentially Weah and Sargent not coming into this camp because they're with the full national team, but it's also possible that some of these kids aren't with the team because their club teams don't release them. You know, and that's a situation that you also have to look at with Sands, who's, you know, really become a pretty pivotal player in that NYCFC roster.
That's true. And they've sort of turned it around in the last few weeks, starting to actually win a couple games here and there. Good point. But let's talk about the omissions in the defense real quick. We don't need to go on too long, but Keita, we've already discussed. He, just for those who don't know, he's at the Richmond Kickers on loan from the Columbus Crew. The Kickers play in USL League One, which is the third tier of American soccer. And then the other defenders who won't be there, I guess, would be Jalen Lindsay, who is injured. I'm not sure he would go anyway, even if he weren't injured. Over Araujo? Right.
It would come down to him versus Araujo, and that may be a losing battle for him at this point.
Yeah.
You don't know. If he doesn't get injured, maybe he's playing in MLS as well. It's hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah, things can hinge on that kind of stuff, and they can change very quickly, but it's not crazy to think Araujo would be beating him out even if he was healthy, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Michael Edwards, what do you think of... what do you think about him? I know some fans will be calling for him to be included at center back. He's at Wolfsburg, which is the best team in the junior Bundesliga right now. They concede almost no goals.
Right.
Why isn't he in the picture?
So I'll preface this by saying that I haven't seen Edwards since he left the DA, and it's certainly possible he's improved his game significantly since he's been there, but the last I saw of Edwards, he was a very good prospect, not a very good player. And what I mean by that is that he has a lot of the physical tools, good size, speed, aerial ability, tackling ability, but he wasn't dependable enough in the mental and technical aspects of the game to be in consideration for me for a tournament like this. He would put his teammates in tough situations with his passing and he was probably good for one very poor tackle a game. I think if the DA tracked card accumulation, he would have been towards the top of it during the last DA season.
Huh.
So, I mean, a very good prospect, a player who I think U.S. men's national team fans should really be following, but not a player that I trust at this point to play in a tournament as big as this one.
Yeah, I have to admit I've never seen him play, but I do. But one person I do trust watched one of his games recently and said some of the same things you just said, just a little bit loose on the ball and you know, not super impressive.
Yeah, he's pretty good with the ball at his feet too, which is a positive, you know, going forward in terms of projection, but it's something that gets him into trouble where he'll try to dribble out of a situation and quickly find out that he's not that good a dribbler. And then he'll pass to a teammate and just give him an absolute hospital ball. You know,
yeah.
Just not something you want. You know, a mistake like that can just get put right back down your throat at a competition like this.
Well, keep an eye, like you said, we should all keep an eye on him. But he's not likely to be in this roster. Okay, let's move to the midfield.
Yeah, go for it.
I've got Durkin and Cirillo, Chris Durkin of DC United and Edwin Cirillo of FC Dallas at the six. And then my four sort of more advanced midfielders will be Alex Mendez, Paxton Pomacall, Richie Ledesma, and Brendan Aaronson.
Yep, that's exactly what I have.
Is any of this even debatable? I guess Cirillo would be debatable.
I don't know how debatable it is. I don't know how debatable Cirillo is anymore. I honestly don't see how Tab can leave him off the roster.
Yeah.
If there's anybody out there who hasn't watched Cirillo play yet, he's a box to box, sideline to sideline six who, you know, is going to win the ball higher up the field than a player like Durkin or Savinha will, who are mostly stay at home stopper types. But he does what he does so well at such a young age that, you know, he's just so well rounded. It's hard to imagine him being left off this roster, even if he's not a player that I view as having a really high ceiling.
Yeah.
He's competing at the MLS level and doing it really well, while some of the players that he'd be competing with for the spot are Brandon Cervinha, who you have to remember he is a player that he's beat for his job in Dallas, and
yep.
Juan Pablo Torres, who can't make an 18 for NYCFC. So I don't see how you could justify bringing.
That's fair. I guess it isn't all that debatable.
Can we just stop for a second and talk about how exciting it is that this MLS season has seen multiple U20 players breaking through for their clubs?
Yeah, it's super exciting. You've probably been, you know, waiting in the threshold for this day to happen longer than I have. So why don't you talk about how exciting it is?
Yeah, it's awesome. You have three players who could make this roster, I think, in Sands, Aronson, and Cirillo, who weren't in the U20 picture when qualifying.
Mm-hmm.
was around, you know, they were on the outside looking in, and they're all players who are playing regular MLS minutes at this point and are, in my opinion, will all break into this roster. And I think you have to go back a couple of cycles to even find a single player to do that. At least the last one I can remember is Jordan Allen, when he broke into the team in between qualifying and the World Cup. But yeah, it's like three players this time around who, you know, just have completely come out of nowhere. And if they didn't exist, they're like a player like Cole Bassett might have made the team.
Yep.
You know,
Cole Bassett is like kind of a 6'8" hybrid who's starting a lot of games for Colorado.
Right.
It's cool. And they're playing well, too. I mean, none of them is, you know, just like an amazing revelation of a talent, I would say. But they're doing well. And I would say in Pomacall was kind of a, I don't know, I wasn't crazy about him being on the qualifying roster back in November, because I thought he looked so poor in his games for Dallas in the summer.
Yeah.
And then he played really well, and now he's, you know, he's probably the best of the bunch, and when you talk about MLS youngsters.
Right. I mean, if there's any lesson to be taken away from Pomacall, it's the effect that a coach can have on a player. And I think that it's fair to say that Luchi Gonzalez becoming the head coach of FC Dallas has really changed the path of Pomacall's development, or, you know, his career path in general, in a way that few of us expected.
And Pomacall himself credits the CONCACAF championship for boosting his confidence a lot too.
Right.
He had a hell of a tournament.
Yeah, he's basically the ultimate Tab player. You know, he runs hard, can play like three or four positions, and is really clean on the ball.
And surprisingly physical.
Yeah, totally. Do you know anything about his injury? Because he came off the field holding his hamstring this past weekend, and I haven't seen an update.
I saw a tweet that I saw a tweet that you probably saw too, where Luchi said it was precautionary, not a big deal.
Okay.
But, you know. Scalotto said that Araujo was going to play on Sunday, and then he wasn't in the 18. So
right.
I don't know what to believe. Yeah. I'm really excited about this whole group of players. I watch Mendez religiously, and I just love watching him play. So inventive, always, every time he touches the ball, there's something interesting about what he does, you know. Right. And probably a Durkin, Mendez, Pomacall starting lineup, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I have my concerns about Durkin's mobility. Saw him get roasted by Darwin Quintero on Sunday in the flesh. I'm told that I shouldn't worry too much about that.
Yeah, the concerns there have waned a little bit for me, because I do think that he has looked more mobile this season, and certainly mobile enough to play the six at a high level. But it's entirely possible that against the teams at this tournament that are going to just hit you with speed, because there are always teams at this tournament that just have big, fast attackers that are just looking to take advantage of smaller players, that, well, not necessarily smaller players, but less athletic players.
Yep.
That a player like Cirillo could get the nod ahead of Durkin if that's the type of lineup we're facing.
Yeah, and I guess I could even see maybe Cirillo and Durkin, if we're really worried that we're going to get run over, play Durkin and Cirillo both in the midfield, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much talent in the rest of the midfield that it's kind of a little hard to, notice. Because at that point you have like Ledesma and or Mendez, like multiple of Ledesma, Mendez, Aronson, Pomacall on the bench. Though I guess it's possible Pomacall could play on the wing if in such a scenario.
Yeah, Aronson and Pomacall can both play on the wing, but you're right. You're giving up a lot to start two defensive midfielders. Ledesma coming off the bench would be a dream come true. Do you feel pretty confident that he's in Tab's plans in your heart of hearts?
Yeah, I mean, as long as he's healthy, he has to be there. I think he's just such a good player, you know. He's gotten his fair share of coverage on this podcast already, so I don't know how much we want to talk about him at length, but I think
it to 20 minutes. Let's keep it to no more than 20 minutes. No, I'm just kidding. We don't have to talk about him.
So, I do think that it will be Mendez and Pomacall to start at, you know, the 8-10 or dual eights or however you want to think about it. And then you have Ledesma coming off the bench, and, you know, what a player to have coming off the bench. You know, as good as our U20 teams have been in the past, and we have had some good U20 teams at this tournament, I don't know that we've ever had a player as talented as Ledesma that you could just have on the bench waiting to come on and run at kids.
Let's talk about omissions here, unless you have anything more to say about any of these guys.
Yeah, so we could kind of wrap the omissions into talking about Aronson, because I think his roster spot is the one in the midfield that I'm the most unsure about.
Yeah, that's fair.
For a couple reasons. For one, we are already taking two players from Philadelphia in this team, and it's possible that Aronson is where Philadelphia draws the line and asks, you know, to keep one of their players who's making an impact on the first team, especially since the rest of the U20 team is so deep at his position.
Yeah, that's true.
But the other thing that gives me pause is that Christian Cappy was the big winner at the U20 camp in Spain, and so, you know, it's entirely possible that Tab calls Cappy in over Aronson. But when it comes down to it, I can't rationalize Aronson not being on the roster as long as he's released.
Yeah. I've just never seen Cappy play. And so I don't feel qualified to speak about him. What makes you say he was the big winner at that camp in March?
I only watched one of the games, but from what I've heard, he had a pretty big impact on the team when he came on. He was like physically dominant, which, you know, again, gets back to one of the tenets of what Tab is looking for in a player like Cappy, or, you know, in this roster spot, really, for a player who's probably not going to start. But, you know, he's a tall, big kid, you know, pretty good passer, maybe not, definitely not as visionary a passer as Aronson is. But, you know, I don't know how much Tab really views that as a necessity, that passing ability, given that,
right,
you know, you have Pomacall and Mendez and Ledesma in the team already.
Right.
So
there does seem to be a little redundancy there with Aronson. And the point about Philly maybe not wanting to release him is a good one. So probably the biggest question mark in the midfield is Aronson. And the likely guy to step in would be Cappy.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, the other name would be Frankie Amaya, right?
Well, so let's move to the omissions then. The other midfielders who are omitted here would be Carlton, Andrew Carlton, that is, Frankie Amaya, and Juan Pablo Torres. I guess we can sort of dispense with Torres because he's more of a six. There are still some out there who want Carlton on this roster. You don't have to look too far on Big Soccer to find them. Why do you think he shouldn't be?
He doesn't deserve it, I guess, is the easy answer.
Yeah.
You know, if you're bringing Carlton over a player like Aronson, I'm just not. I just don't see how you could justify it. Like, Aronson's playing regularly and playing well at the MLS level, and Carlton is playing more irregularly and playing worse at the USL level.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so then, what about Carlton? Why shouldn't Carlton go over Ledesma or Mendez? Obviously, I'm devil's advocating here. I don't believe Carlton should go over Ledesma or Mendez. But, you know, the argument would go Ledesma and Mendez are both playing U19 soccer in Europe. Carlton's at least playing professional soccer, such as it is for Atlanta United, too. What's the argument there?
I mean, I don't see any argument for him over Mendez. You know, like, he's not going to... You know, the knock against Mendez has been his lack of ability or want to play defense. And any question you have about Mendez in that area, you could just like quintuple with Carlton. So that doesn't make a ton of sense to me. And then you could Ledesma. I think the argument would be that Ledesma has played has he played 90 minutes yet this year? I don't.
He has not. No, he played, I think he did like a 40-minute sub in his most recent game, and PSV U19s haven't played for a week and a half or almost 2 weeks now. So, yeah.
There's an argument there that, like, why bring a player to the tournament who hasn't played in such a long time? You know, rust is a thing mm-hmm. for professional soccer players. And but when it comes down to it, I just think Ledesma's a better player, and if you have a chance at a healthy, say 90% Richie Ledesma, it's better than what Carlton offers these days, sorry to say.
Yeah, it's too bad, because he was, I still hearken back to that win over Paraguay in the U17 World Cup. He was brilliant in that game, and yeah, it's never really been the same since.
Right. I mean, it happens. You know, he's not the first player that has had a bit of dip in what we're expected of their careers. You know, going from the U17 cycle to a U20 cycle, and he also wouldn't be the first player to turn his fortunes around if he at some point, you know, started getting on the field for Atlanta and showing the potential and the skill that we all know he has. It's just not there at the moment.
If we're not going to bring Carlton, who at least has some sort of tempting upside, I don't see any reason why we would bring Amaya. And I guess we should just move on to the forwards, unless you have an Amaya point to make.
No, I have absolutely nothing to say about Frankie Amaya. You know, he's a good player. I don't know what he's doing. Where is he right now? He's on loan in U.S. to a USL.
Yeah, team. Orange County SC. I don't know if he appeared over the weekend or not.
Yeah, it's just he didn't blow me out of the water in qualifying, and seeing him go as the number one pick in the Super Draft was a little perplexing. Though, you know, I am happy for the kid, and I think that he could have a future for the national team. I wish he went to an MLS team that played with a number 10, because that would make me think a little bit more about it his career path. But man, it would be hard to see him make this roster given what he's done in the last couple of months. And really, I think he's a player that, for if we're talking about national team prospects, that you throw in the back of your mind and hope something comes of him at some point, you know?
Yeah, high energy, hard worker, reasonably technical, but hasn't shown anything special the way a lot of the people on this roster have. So let's go to the forwards. Who do you got?
So my forward line will be Yuli Yanez, Jonathan Amon, Conrad De La Fuente, Sebastian Soto, and Ayo Akinola.
Okay, let's start at the end there. Why Akinola? Is that because you want him there or because you know Tab will take him?
I think it's because I want him there. I haven't been the biggest fan of Akinola's game this cycle, and I've been somewhat critical of Tab continuing to give him minutes over other players, but you can't argue with his production, and I thought he looked good when he got on the field in Toronto.
Yep.
This year. Add to that his flexibility to play both the 9 and the 7, and I think that makes him a lock for the roster, and we'll probably see a good amount of minutes even if he's not starting at either of those positions.
Yep, yeah. I got nothing to add to that. Sebastian Soto, I've been a big fan of his. I know you're a little bit more skeptical than I am, partly because he didn't play too well in November. He came in late, just like Richards and Dest. Richards and Dest were among the top performers for the U.S. Soto was not. Do you think this is a position of weakness, the number 9?
Yeah, I think that the 9 and the goalkeeper are the two positions that when I look at this roster, I think that are the positions where we could have a player if there was a really good player to that we had in this cycle that, you know, could start over the players that we have penciled in there right now without much of a question. Like, and that player exists at striker. His name is Josh Sargent. It's just we don't know what that situation is at the moment. I don't mean to be somebody who's super cynical towards Soto. He's a great passer from the 9, but I do worry about his struggles in qualifying, where he didn't only not play well, I think he also never looked comfortable. Yeah. He didn't look comfortable with the team. Wasn't a performance that I look back upon and then go, boom, that guy's the starting 9 for our U20 team, you know?
Yeah. Well, maybe I'm being emotional about it, but I'm optimistic. I'm optimistic that, you know, that was a tough transition for him. A lot of travel, you can throw all the excuses out there you want. A lot of travel, changing climate, yada, yada, yada. He never got comfortable. He didn't play well. Give him a chance in Poland here at the end of this season, after he's got some, you know, admittedly brief Bundesliga appearances under his belt. He should come in full of confidence. He is a universal number 9. He can score with his head. He can score with his feet. He can pass. He can hold the ball up. He's not going to beat anybody on the dribble, but he does all the stuff that I think Tab's system needs him to do. And I think he will figure it out. I hope he will figure it out.
Yeah, I hope so too. The counter argument to he had to fly a long distance to play in qualifying and jet lag and those types of things are that Dest and Richards came off the plane and were like our two of our 3 or 4 best players.
It's true, yeah. I did hear that Dest wasn't going to start that first game he started because he had been pretty bad in training, but then Lindsay went down with an injury, and then Dest was like a late add to the starting 11.
Yeah.
And then he played really well. So.
Nobody will be happier than me if Soto lights up the U20 World Cup.
Yeah. But I get the concerns. And then so quickly on the wings, it's Conrad, Amon, and Ulianez. Anything specific to say about these guys?
I think Yanez's situation is a little similar to Ledesma in that you have to be a little bit worried about his lack of game time. But he was our best winger in qualifying, and even on this roster is probably the biggest goal scoring threat cutting inside from the wing, regardless of who you put out there. So I think he has to be on the roster. I've been a little down on Amon as a national team player because I don't think he's been consistently dangerous enough for his club team in a league that I think has a relatively low level of defending. Mm. But I don't have those same concerns about Amon at the U20 level, and think he gives Giannis a run for his money at the left wing spot.
Okay. And then Conrad's pretty much an automatic starter at right wing unless Akinola gets slotted in there.
Yeah, it's possible Akinola ends up taking some of those minutes, but Conrad's such a dynamic player and has the ability to get to the end line, you know, pretty consistently. And so even if he's not the goal scoring threat that the left wingers in this group are, it's hard to see him not starting.
I'm really excited to see how he looks, you know, on the field with this group of players, because mostly what I see are the USMNT videos, highlight reels, but yeah. He's at a minimum, he poses threat. He's a professional in the way, now he's not literally a professional, but he's sort of like has the hallmarks of a professional soccer player. He's secure on the ball. He makes sound decisions and he can get to the end line and create some problems for the defense. And that's more than we've had at right wing, even in this cycle, sure. You know?
Yep. And if you want to look at it logistically, he has to be on the roster just because he's the only player that can play right wing outside of Akinola.
Yeah. So. Right. Those are really the only three wingers we have, or pure wingers, Giannis, Amon, and Conrad, because Nick Taitagui is injured, or at least not fully fit. The only other omission in the forward position, I think, would be Justin Renix, who's just coming back from a hammy injury with the New England Revolution.
Yep.
He was excellent. He was excellent in November, right? I mean, he was better, probably better than Soto at striker.
Right. Yeah, I'd say so. It's just, you know, coming off of an injury, and he hasn't looked quite as good as Akinola has when he's gotten his chances, you know, in and around MLS. And
I was gonna say that. Yeah, I think he had one 45-minute appearance for the Revs, and it was not great.
Yeah, and even if he had looked as good as Akinola, he doesn't offer the flexibility that Akinola does. So he's not going to make the roster over him. So it comes down to, do you take him over Soto? And it's probably a no from me.
Yeah, same here. It's not like a slam dunk decision. It's just probably a no.
Yeah, no, I like Renix as a player. I think that, like, if you're looking at the general, let's say, U.S. soccer Twitter spheres ratings of these players in terms of who gets talked about, Renix is maybe the best player of the group that doesn't get any amount of hype generated around his name.
Yeah, but that's fair. A
couple things working against him with the injury, and unfortunately he's a New England Revolution player, which is a bummer.
How dare you besmirch the name of that great American franchise?
Great franchise, perhaps. Great American franchise. I'd like to see them play a young American player before claiming to be that.
Yeah, totally. So starting 11, if I'm hearing you right, I think it's going to be Ochoa at goalkeeper. You think it could be Dos Santos, right?
Yep, I'd say I'd bet on Ochoa as well, but I won't be surprised at all by Dos Santos.
Okay, and then at least against Ukraine in the first game, Gloucester, Richards, Sands?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. If McKenzie will be healthy enough to play. I say if McKenzie is near full fitness, it's McKenzie, but I'm not educated enough on that situation to say so I'll default to you and say Sands.
Okay, I'll say Sands, yeah. Sands and then Dest at right back. It's a shame Julian Araujo doesn't get to start in the form that he's in, but that's them's the breaks. And then Durkin, Mendez, and Pomacall in the midfield. I know we agreed on that. And then Conrad on the right, Giannis on the left.
Yeah, that's what I'd do. Him on the left, and then Soto up front.
Okay. I'm good with that. This is a 100% consensus podcast.
Right.
Now,
it is possible that if there is a member of that of that midfield slash forward line of the of those two lines that doesn't start that we have just said, I think it might be Soto. It's because I we know how much Tab likes Akinola, and if Conrad and Giannis are the wingers, then Akinola has played the nine in recently. I do think that it's entirely possible it's Akinola that starts up top, and Soto's comes off the bench and has to prove his worth to this group, having not done it in qualifying.
It's a cruel world. I suppose that's possible. It's just hard to start Akinola over Soto, given Soto's ability to pass the ball and connect with teammates. We should be able to keep some of the ball in these games, and we can build through Soto, even if he's not at his sharpest. Let's talk about what we do if Sargent or Wea is included in the roster. Let's start with just Wea. Who do you cut?
Yeah, so both of these are rough decisions, and with Wea on the roster, presumably as a winger, you can't really cut Conrad because Wea's more comfortable on the left-hand sides, and you're on the left-hand side, and you already have both of the other wingers are predominantly left-sided. So one of Giannis or Amon has to go, and that's a really tough decision. And it was a bit easier for me before this weekend when Amon scored a goal.
Yeah.
For his club team, but I think I'm still going to go with cutting Amon from the team.
Yeah. I don't even want to choose. I don't want Giannis to get cut from the team because I don't want Gary Cliven to incinerate himself.
Right.
But I don't know, man. I just look at it like sort of facts are facts. Amon has his flaws, but he's a professional soccer player. And he did just score a really nice goal over the weekend. Giannis is playing friendlies with Wolfsburg. I don't know. I wouldn't be mad with either choice. I wouldn't be happy with either one.
I mean, it's also worth thinking about that if we do cut Uli from the team, I'm sure there'll be a L-Tree representative on his doorstep fairly quickly.
Yeah, for sure. Yep, no doubt about it. That ship will have sailed the moment he gets cut, I think, is probably fair to speculate. No, that's not fair. We don't know that.
It would be a problem that we don't necessarily have to have if we just bring him. But no, there's no way of looking at that where I come out thinking that's fair. Amon, like you said, is a professional soccer player and he deserves to be here, and Uli is a major reason why this team is here. So
yeah, he was so good. He was so good in November under similar circumstances. Not much real competition in his recent resume at that point either. I guess this is the problem with bringing Wea or Sargent, that you have to make these tough choices with players that are pretty deserving of going to this tournament. I guess I would drop Akinola because I realize Wea is not as comfortable on the right side, but he and Akinola are both guys who can play the nine or on the wing. So it's kind of a like-for-like replacement. And it's not like Akinola is amazing on the right wing either. So,
yeah. And it should also be mentioned that if you cut Akinola, that's probably another ship sailing.
He's going to go to Canada.
Yeah,
that's true. So then, if Sargent comes and Wea doesn't come to the World Cup in Poland, who do you replace with Sargent, I should say?
So if Sargent comes, I think that the player leaving the roster has to be Soto. And it's just a result of you can't really afford to flat number nines to true number nines in this tournament, and Soto didn't hasn't shown me that he's a significantly better player at this point than Akinola is, and you throw in Akinola's flexibility, and I think that if Sargent's coming, Sargent's playing almost every single minute at the number nine, and I'm not sure what else Soto offers this team. And he does. I don't think he offers in limited minutes what Akinola does. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm just trying to figure out if I should argue with you or just sort of concede that it makes sense. I'd also take Akinola off just because I like Soto. I'm just being emotional about it, but I like Soto. I don't think Akinola offers what Soto does in possession by any stretch. Now, you're right. Akinola will be the guy who makes a play and scores a goal off of a broken situation just because he's strong and fast and opportunistic and can hit the ball hard. So,
right. I don't know. I think what it comes down to is that if we throw a hypothetical out there, like 20 minutes, 15 minutes left in a game, the front line is Uli, Sargent, Conrad, and one of them you want, and it's a tie game or whatever, or maybe we're down a goal and you have to throw somebody on the field. I think that I would rather take off one of the wingers that I mentioned and throw Akinola on and leave Sargent on the field. And with Soto, you're kind of handcuffed and you're going to replace Sargent, right? Because your front line's going to lose a bit of that power going forward with both Soto and Sargent on the field.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, I don't want to deal with that stuff, man. You know, I mean, doesn't it just seem too painful?
It does, and I don't envy Tab's position at the moment.
I like the roster without Sargent and Weah on it. I really do. I know you think Soto's not good enough, and I think that's the main dispute between us, right? I have faith in Soto. You're being a little more cold and logical about it, which is probably the right way to be. And you say like you're not sure he can deliver at the World Cup.
Yeah, I would like him to, and I think he's a very good player. And I just think that there is if you can bring a player of the quality of Josh Sargent or Timothy Weah to this tournament, I think you have to do so. And I think that Soto's kind of in the position to get cut.
Yeah. I'm going to give a little bit of a hot take and say, I'm not sure Weah is more dangerous than Giannis or Amon. I mean, he's certainly more of a professional, certainly more reliable and, more physically. I mean, he's long and he's fast and he's pretty strong. But in terms of creating danger with the ball at their feet, I'm not sure he is more dangerous than Giannis or Amon.
I mean, I think we might just be getting into it on a technicality of the term, more like the phrase more dangerous. I think that he's a more well-rounded soccer player than either of them are right now. Mm-hmm. And that's the distinction I would make, is that if you're deep in a game and you need a player to make a play and you could count on him to trap the ball, turn with it, run, and maybe cut in and take a shot from the top of the box, I'd rather have Weah doing that than either of those two.
Okay. So we'll see. We shall see. Roster drops on the 10th, like I said at the top of the show. I think our work here is done, Hartman.
Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, man. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you.